Each gospel has a different story in the telling of those days after Jesus' death. But we read always that it was the women who went back to the tomb. Of course, they were in deep despair, deep grief, and they too needed one another to share that sorrow, help each other to bear the grief. For the gospel writer Matthew, which we read and heard this morning, it is recorded that only two women traveled to the tomb at the dawn of that first week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary. In Mark and Luke's gospel writing, the women bring spices to the tomb for anointing, while in John, only Mary came. We don't have facts. We have story. A story that we know so well. For when we're grieving, most of us have this desire to do something. Women and a desire to simply be present, to do what is possible in the midst of the reality of death. And you know the story, and the women hurried on their way after seeing Jesus, ran smack into him. "Greetings," he says. "Slow down. Catch your breath." In the midst of the fear and the joy, they held tight and they grabbed hold of his feet, it said, and worshiped him. They had to clutch that which might just get away again. They held tight because his death, all their hope had died. You often know that story. Just a few days ago, an older couple received a phone call from their son who lives far away. The son said he was sorry, but he wouldn't be able to visit over the holidays. After all, the grandkids say hello. They assured him that they did understand, but when they hung up the phone, they didn't dare look at one another. And just a few days ago, a woman was called into her supervisor's office and told that she would need to be let go. Just not enough work to justify her position. So she cleaned out her desk and she walked out the door, knowing that her hopes to get ahead were packed away as well. And earlier in the week, we know someone who received the hard news from a physician. Someone also heard the words, "I never really loved you." Yes, just a few days ago, hope was crucified. So often we can't imagine that an encounter with Easter is even possible for the darkness that seems so overwhelming. On this Easter morning, as one writer said, "Let me be very clear, this day is not about bunnies and girls in cute new dresses. It's about more hope than we can handle." And I challenge us today to hold tightly to that hope. You know the story. Jesus said to the women, "Don't be afraid, go." Jesus assures them that they are to tell others to go back to Galilee. Return to your ordinary, everyday lives. Put one foot in front of the other. Wake, eat breakfast, go on your way. And there it is, promised, "You will see me." Yet we know that their testimony as women was not even admissible in court under Jewish law. The word of a woman had no public credibility in that patriarchal culture. But God chose to reveal the miracle of Jesus' resurrection first to women. And they were then told to report the astonishing news of the empty tomb to the men. Jim Wallace, editor-in-chief of Sojourners Magazine, writes this: On that first Easter morning, the women were present at great risk to themselves. They were at the grave of a convicted political criminal who had just been crucified. The guards posted at the tomb could easily have reported the identities of any followers or supporters of this one whom they had killed and whose movement they hoped now to crush. He wrote, "The women at the tomb have always reminded me of other women, like those mothers of the disappeared in Latin America, who in country after country are the ones who, when things are at their worst, when the violence of military-ruled countries was most grotesque, when the suffering was so horrible, those women came out time and time again and stood alone before the military and before the world, testifying for their loved ones and for truth. Women also put their lives on the line and played key roles in the transformation of many African countries, as well as the peace movement in Northern Ireland and in the hopeful beginnings of the Arab Spring protest." Wallace also names the mothers of the movement, mothers of young men and women of color who've died at the hands of law enforcement, while in police custody or as the result of gun violence. You know some of those names: Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown, Sandra Bland, Eric Garner, Jordan Davis, so many more. Their powerful testimonies on behalf of criminal justice reform and racial justice, common sense gun control, speak of the power of these women to raise their voices for justice and hope in the face of unspeakable personal tragedy. This past Good Friday was a third anniversary of those 276 Chibok girls who were abducted by that terrorist group Boko Haram in Nigeria. And as of now, 195 of those continue, we believe, to be held. We know, and we and their mothers and fathers continue to pray and hope against all odds for their lives. You see, this resurrection event is a pivotal moment in all of history. The women come not without fear, but with great love and faith. For their loving perseverance and courage, these women are rewarded with the honor of being entrusted with the most important news in the history of the world, probably. Wallace writes, "These women and many women who have come after them can rightly be called history's midwives of hope. And they become for us on the resurrection morning of Easter the primary example of the story of what we too are called to be. Midwives of hope." The word hope, you know, is often used in ways that are most mystical and rhetorical, political or otherwise, or so religious that the meaning just escapes the world. It somehow escapes the reality in which we have to live. But I beg us to tightly hang on to hope this morning. Hope sometimes becomes a feeling or a mood or an inspired moment that has lived somehow above the painful, the dull agonies of history. We're down here living in it all, and someone says, "Well, you have to have hope." And right away we think, "I'm supposed to feel something I'm not feeling? To get into a mood that isn't natural to me? I need to rise above this daily reality somehow and be hopeful." And I resonate with Wallace when he writes, "But the more I wrestle with this word hope, the more I am convinced that we must see hope in a different and indeed a more biblical way." You see, hope is not simply a feeling or a mood or a rhetorical flourish. It is a choice, a decision, an action based upon faith. Hope is the very dynamic of history. Hope is the engine of change. It is the energy of transformation. It is the door from one reality to another. Things seem possible, reasonable, understandable, even logical in hindsight. Things that we can deal with, things that don't seem extraordinary to us, really often seemed quite impossible, unreasonable even, illogical when we looked ahead to them. The changes, the possibilities, the opportunities, the surprises that no one or maybe a very few would even have imagined become history after they've occurred. What looked as though it could never happen is now before us to understand. The news from the women at the tomb was such great hope, and yet those disciples called it nonsense. But you know, hope unbelieved is always called nonsense. The nonsense of the resurrection became the hope that shook that Roman Empire and established the Christian movement. The nonsense of slave songs in Egypt and Mississippi became the hope that let the oppressed go free. The nonsense of a bus boycott in Montgomery, Alabama became the hope that has transformed a nation. So many of us hang tight to what we know or have experienced. We can't imagine ourselves differently than we are today, or healed of that which binds and afflicts us. We can't imagine ourselves forgiven. We hang tightly to what we have known. Just this last Thursday morning, 3 days ago, Harriet Kaler was just starting to get around in the morning. She said she hadn't yet gotten dressed, was in her bathrobe, when she heard the doorbell ringing. As she approached the door at a relatively early hour, between 8 and 9, a tall black man stood. As she opened the door, and you know, those of you who know Harriet is about 4'11", not very big, slight. She opened the door and she was shocked to realize that it was Brian McMichael. Just a few minutes before, his brother had driven him to Harriet and Earl's home. He had walked away from the prison, the Huntington Correctional Institution, after being an inmate for 43 years. 43 years. He had been convicted of his crime at the age of 16. A juvenile, and been sentenced to life in prison. With recent rulings in the Supreme Court, which had then turned to the Pennsylvania legislature, after years and years of letter writing and phone calls and pleas from individuals, from Harriet and many of you, the sentences of juvenile offenders are now being reviewed. And there is that opening of hope. And Brian, who has known Harriet through her ongoing steady work with the Pennsylvania Prison Society, said, "I don't want to leave town without seeing you, Harriet." Brian, now 59 years old, has been holding on to hope. His brother, a resident of New Jersey, has been able to secure Brian a job and a place to live. And Brian walks out in a world that must be so different than the one he left. And he is a changed man. Brian and his brother sat down with Harriet, and I can only imagine the ecstatic emotions flowing through that room. My heart just tingled as she told me that resurrection story. Thank you, Harriet. You have held on. You have taken great risks. And you have encouraged all of us to hold tightly to new possibilities. And now Brian is free. Yes, and certainly he has challenges ahead of him. But we move into the future one step at a time. We hold on to hope. The systems which we doubted would have changed have released a prisoner this last week, and so many more wait. For Pennsylvania has the highest number of juvenile lifers than any country in the world. I know this, but Wallace reminds me that suffering and hope are always joined in human history. Jesus showed us at the resurrection that it comes by way of the cross. The cost of moving from one reality to another in our personal lives and history is always great. But it is the only way to walk through the door of hope. I want to hold tightly to this hope. I know this will be the last Easter that you and I we'll celebrate together, probably for a long while. I know we may be tempted to hold on to the past, but that won't be healthy. I know that we, you and I, are all challenged to move into the future, holding tightly to the way of hope. A new pastor will come and be with you. And I, too, will find my way with a new community of faith and a new home. And Jesus will lead the way. History depends upon those who are willing to walk through new doors. Those who live and act and even die for the sake of the future they know by faith. I agree with Wallace, who writes, "It is not nonsense to believe that weapons of mass destruction are not necessary and that war is not inevitable. It is not nonsense to believe that a child's race and class and sex will not always determine their future life. It is not nonsense to believe that we who have been divided from each other will one day sit down together at the welcome table of God's love and God's grace. These are no nonsense thoughts. With the Easter eyes of resurrection, we can see through the door with which you too can walk, through which we are all invited. So let us hold tightly to this hope. May we continue to plant and grow and sow, risk and walk through the challenging times, holding on to our visions and dreams. From buried grain, wheat rises. In the dark earth, there is transformation. May we find the faith and the courage to bear the cost of those possibilities in these very challenging times. Hold on tightly to one another. For the God of resurrection challenges each of us to join together, holding on and to the one who will never leave us. The resurrected Christ holds on to us. To you and to me, and will never let us go. Amen.